Oh man, what a show for you here. Week 11 preview time. We've got so much to get into. Andy Behrens joins the show in the first half to talk through what we need to see out of a couple of NFC North offenses after some troubling recent performances. And does Audric Estime continue to consolidate power in the Broncos' backfield? Then Tara Roberts joins us to give her make or break players for this week, including notes on Nick Chubb, J.K. Dobbins, and then we finish it off with our keys to winning players. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Friday, November 15th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that is Andy Behrens. Andy, it's week 11. How we feeling, buddy?
Hell of a day to talk ball. Hell of a week to talk ball. Great matchups. Man, it's like rivalry week in the NFL. It's pretty awesome. We have some of the best, not just like historic matchups within divisions, but we have some of the best contemporary matchups. We have great rivalries that aren't even going to come up on this show. Like, it's a pretty loaded week. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's a pretty electric week of football for sure. We have some teams that we count on, some players on bye. That's for sure. Hey, Chuba Hubbard managers are banged on the bye this week. You know, you've been riding the K Dot and Express. The Bucks are on a bye this week. We don't have to hyperanalyze Marvin Harrison Jr.'s route tree for a week because the Cardinals are on bye. Mercifully, the New York Giants are on bye, so you don't have to do Malik Nabers coping stuff this week. That's fantastic. a lot of players we count on the bye week. A lot of big time matchups, Andy. I will say this, before we got started recording, I jokingly said to you, you know, what the people out there don't talk about enough is the plight of fantasy analysts, and that yes, we do get to talk about all these great games that you have in your matchup section to cover. However, we also have to talk about all of the beautiful babies and pretend that we care about all of these teams, because like people need to start players in the lineup. And it's funny that when I opened up the week 11 schedule, and I was, especially because I was looking for a convictions pick player, which we do a written segment on every single week. And by the way, I usually just take that player and use it for my keys to winning on this podcast. So, hey, work smarter, not harder. And of course, I was like, ooh, Browns Saints. Like, there's probably going to be some fantasy players in that. You know, was there like five wins combined in that game? That is just the state of fantasy. Like, you got to care about all these games.
That's why it's kind of bullshit that, like, you know, everything has like its own national celebration day, right? Almost everything, like food items, every occupation. But to the best of my knowledge, there's no national fantasy analyst day. And people, I don't know, people forget what hard, difficult lives we lead.
Well, as the, I don't know, authoritarian leader of the fantasy industry, as the president of the Fantasy Sports Writers Association, we're doing a lot of investigating and questioning about ethics and how things get done. I'm not making a political statement here, but there's people out there are asking questions about certain things. I think maybe we need to look into what's your role in all of this. Why is there no national fantasy analyst holiday at this point?
You know what? I'll make it my highest priority. Actually, we may scrap award season entirely this year, just to initiate some lobbying efforts.
I'm not opposed to that. All right, that's enough. That's enough of this nonsense. Absolutely, no one cares about any of the jokes that all the very, very poor jokes that we just made for the last, I don't know, 90 seconds of the podcast. Let's get to the serious business of the show, which is previewing Week 11, just like we do every week on the Friday podcast. In the first half of the show, Andy Behrens is going to join me to give three burning fantasy questions he wants answered this week, and then three matchups he says deserve your attention. We got some great ones to talk about in that section. Then in the back half of the show, the great Tara Roberts joins us to identify the make or break players that could determine the outcome of your fantasy matchups. And then we finish it with our keys to winning players each week. Sorry to the sponsor, I probably already spoiled mine, potentially, or at least where that player's coming from. But let's put a pin in that We'll get to that in the second half of the show. For now, Andy, let's talk through the three burning fantasy questions that you want answered this week. And you know, you said in the I'm gonna peel back the curtain here. The pre-show little discussion we had, you're like, I couldn't bring myself to talk about Anthony Richardson again. It's been talked to death. I'm sure you guys have talked about it in previous pods, blah, 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 blah. And yet here in your first, you can't bring yourself to talk about the pain and misery that is the Colts and Anthony Richardson. Instead, you want to bring yourself to talk about the pain and misery close to your own heart, which is about the Chicago Bears. So what is the burning question you have here to start us off in week 11?
Yeah. So listen, I know they're in the coping corner, but that's not on this edition of the podcast. Okay. This is my opportunity to talk about the Bears. And with all due respect to Anthony Richardson, I don't like when I wake up at like 3 a.m., I'm not thinking about the Colts. I'm mulling over the Bears. The Bears are the team that, that really has me at a deep psychological level. So my first burning question is, of course, Shane Waldron is out in Chicago. So does that mean that everything's fixed? And that's kind of a joke, but also not, because I do think that the design and the shape of this Bears offense has been pretty unhelpful and also completely detached from the personnel that are actually on the roster, right? So I kind of think things could get better in a hurry. It is an extremely difficult matchup this week, though. I could have talked about Bears and Packers in the matchup section, except it seems a little bit one-sided. Mostly, I just wanted to use this as an opportunity to kind of float a theory, or at least maybe it's a complaint, maybe it's a theory, I don't know, that I have about Caleb. Coming off a rewatch of the Patriots game, which was terrible. I don't have anything. I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything that Caleb Williams is doing or anything the Bears offense is doing. It was a really brutal rewatch. But we're in our second cycle this season already of like, the Bears got it wrong at quarterback, with respect to Caleb. And I just want to remind people that between those two segments of the season, there was actually a really good month, and everything was going right. Caleb went into the Bears bye having thrown 9 touchdown passes over his previous 4 games. They had won 3 games in a row. Again, vibes were good. He was good. But he's like the rare rookie quarterback where everything got worse coming out of the bye week. And the schedule is a little bit more challenging. But still, you know, everything trending in the right direction. You get a bye week, a chance to reset, a chance to, you know, build on some things that went right in the first half of the season. And then everything just absolutely falls apart. He's completed just over 50% of his throws over the last 3 games. He's been sacked 18 times, hasn't thrown a touchdown pass, also hasn't thrown an interception, which is kind of what I want to discuss. Matt, there are no contested opportunities in this offense, which I think is just weird. Caleb has been painfully inaccurate for 3 games, but he's also been inaccurate in a very particular way. Nowhere near coverage. Like when he misses on an outbreaking route, it's way wide and it's caught by a player on the sidelines. When he misses a downfield route, it's 6 yards beyond the deepest player on the field. And there are just no contested balls here, which isn't good. He actually has, you know, this is one of those stats that's really good in isolation, but it is not good in practice for the Bears right now. Caleb has one of the lowest rates of turnover worthy plays in the league, according to PFF. And that, again, that definitely matches the eye test. But when you look at the other names surrounding him on that list, it's guys who are actually super accurate passers, right? It's guys who are like completing 68, 69% of their throws. He's the only guy there who's struggling to keep above like 60% in terms of completion rate. I guess what I'm saying is he's playing like a guy who's sort of had all of the risk acceptance coached out of him, right? Like the one mandate that maybe he's been given is to never, ever turn the ball over. And it wasn't even a huge problem for him early in the season, which is a little bit vexing to me. Like most guys who are inaccurate scattershot passers are inaccurate in all directions, I think. They're like Jameis, they're like Sam Darnold, they're like Richardson. The inaccuracy also leads to picks. But Williams has really only been inaccurate away from trouble. And I feel like there's an alternate version of this Bears season in which Caleb has thrown like twice the number of interceptions, but we're all feeling a whole lot better about him, and no one's questioning the pick.
I think that's an interesting kind of like alternate universe to live in, and I can kind of see your point here. It is a little funny that I was just on Kevin Clark's podcast yesterday. This is Football, and we were joking that it's funny that we've gotten to a point based on the discussion that he and I were having. It's funny we've gotten to a point where it's like, man, did the Bears almost have too many good players around the number one overall pick? You know, I've floated this theory out there that I think there's a lot of egos at play in the wide receiver room and stuff like that. And you're floating that, then on the other side of it, you're floating this theory of like, has he almost been too not turnover prone, you know, like in a weird way, this is how I think far and how quickly things have slipped away from the Chicago Bears here is that these are the,
that's how down bad I am, by the way, that I'm like, maybe he should have thrown more picks.
Yeah, no, but at the same time, like I do kind of agree with you. And I think he's as funny as all that sounds, I do think it kind of makes sense. And it's almost like he's a reckless quarterback being coached by a defensive first head coach who probably wants to win a lot like how they won last year, but just with a better quarterback. And yeah, you know, that's just probably not ever who Caleb Williams is going to be in an ideal world. I mean, yeah, obviously no one's here to absolve Caleb Williams for playing poorly the last coming out of the bye, but I think we can also acknowledge that he showed some real promise against some bad teams, but showed real deal promise at different chunks of the year. And that's unfortunately, like, this is just how the take machine goes, Andy, is that yeah, we have to do different cycles of, well, did they get the pick wrong and stuff like that. And again, it's also unfortunate that we have to probably keep talking about them for the next 7 weeks or whatever, when in reality, every time I think about this team, it's just almost nothing that happens over the next 7 weeks really, really matters, obviously, because again, I don't think you should be starting any of these Bears pass catchers in fantasy. Mm-hmm. I do think, you know, that they'll probably try to ride the hell out of DeAndre Swift. We'll see. He's probably still, I don't know if you disagree, but I feel like he's probably still starting fantasy back. I'm at least, you know, there's a part of me that's mildly intrigued to what Thomas Brown brings to the offense versus what Shane Waldron was bringing to the offense. Don't think too much is going to change. Nothing that happens over the next 7 weeks really matters for this team. All that really matters is let's not ruin Caleb Williams and let's just get to next year. Let's just get to 2025 and try all over again.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And almost everything that you hear from Thomas Brown, and it's mostly been, you know, generalities so far, but it certainly feels like a very run committed head coach. And that would probably be the best thing for the Bears right now. He's spoken a little bit about, you know, sort of marrying the run game to the pass game in ways that it hasn't been to this point. He's got sort of a deeper coaching background on the running side of the ball. So I think we're going to see a lot of that. And I actually think DeAndre Swift and maybe behind it, like Roschon Johnson, is a guy you can stash on rosters, I guess. Not that it's the most high upside offense, but I think there are going to be some opportunities in the run game. I think the more that I watch and rewatch, it feels like some coach needs to have said to Caleb, hey, like, if you have a 3-interception game, guess what? You're still the starting quarterback of the Chicago Bears. There's like, it's fine. Let's try some things. Let's give opportunities to, like, let's give contested opportunities to freaking DJ Moore and Rome Odunze. Let's see how that plays out. Cause there really hasn't been a lot of that. And he's so different from the version of Caleb Williams that was even not a great, you know, like his worst moments in college, he's putting the ball at risk. And that has not happened in the NFL, but maybe to a fault.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'd love to see something different here. And shoot, again, maybe they get the fired offensive coordinator bump. in this game against the Packers. It is at home. Caleb Williams has been better at home statistically, theoretically. At least that was kind of the talking point for a while. Now I feel like it's kind of slipped away even past beyond that. So I don't know.
The vibes are not good in the stadium, so I don't know why he would be better at home, like long term.
I don't know about that either. So yeah, we'll see. Do you have anything else on this game? Because I do think from a fantasy perspective, it is like, I think you gotta stay away from all these Bears passing game players until we see something different.
Only thing I have on the game is that if the Packers defense is available in your league, you should go get them because they're going to get 6 to 10 sacks.
I would say that's a good bit of advice there. Andy got out his coping for the Bear that's in the coping corner and then gave you some great advice at the end of it. Yeah, if the Packers defense is available in your league, they are definitely one to start this week. Okay, let's move on to your second question here, which does have to do with another NFC North team.
Yeah, I think this one has pretty significant fantasy ramifications, and that is was the Jacksonville game just like a 1 week glitch for Sam Darnold, or have things actually taken a turn and like not a good turn, right, toward early career Sam Darnold? First of all, again, this matters because the Vikings offense is too big to fail, right? As Darnold goes, so goes Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson, Aaron Jones, et cetera. We are depending on these guys. Darnold is coming off a 0 touchdown, 3 interception game against one of the NFL's worst pass defenses, a defense that Caleb Williams lit up, a defense that has been lit up by pretty much everyone who's seen it. Darnold has now thrown 5 picks in his last 2 games. Not great. Over the past 3 weeks, Minnesota has faced Jacksonville, the Colts, and the Rams. Not really a murderer's row of defenses there. And they have scored 53 total points in those games, which is obviously that's like 17.7 per game, right? Not great. Darnold apparently picked up a throwing hand injury, which could very well be the explanation here for the sort of recent nosedive in performance. But it also shouldn't make anyone feel better because it's an ongoing situation, right? It's an ongoing injury. Minnesota is also facing Tennessee this week, and I don't really know what to tell people about Tennessee's defense because it's great on paper. They're the number one pass defense in terms of just purely yards allowed, and they're pretty good in terms of yards per attempt too. They're near the top of the league, but they've also been just cooked by every genuinely good offense that's been on the schedule. So I don't know what to make of that. But I do know that we need a good game from Darnold here, or the concern level is going to be quite elevated.
It's 100%. And I will say that as a Darnold skeptic, or certainly someone that pushed back on the Sam Darnold oligarchy at the beginning of the year, you know, my stupid little bit there. This is kind of the Darnold I've been fearing. And I think at times he is pushed into this Darnold zone for a while, even when the team was good to start the year, the record was good. He had like a turnover a game. He was just, he was good for that. Every single week they'd go out there. And, you know, that's not that surprising. Like Darnold, this is another thing where I think we start to jump the shark with this, like with the take zone, basically, because Darnold is like, you know, going off at the statistically having a really nice start to the year. The team is winning games. And all of a sudden we're talking about Sam Darnold like he's not Sam Darnold, when the reality is like, he's definitely good enough to hold down the fort in a good situation. But, you know, the idea of Darnold being, you know, the next Baker Mayfield or something like that, I mean, Darnold's never been as good as Baker Mayfield. Darnold, he's never had a stretch in time in the NFL where he's been as good as Baker Mayfield was, even in moments where he played himself out of a job in Cleveland. So I think this specter of Darnold has always existed. I will say I don't know that it's just going to suddenly go off the cliff, right? Or he's, because the situation is still really good. Now they have lost Christian Darrisaw, their left tackle, who's playing fantastic, and they added Cam Robinson into the mix, and he's still trying to get up to speed and everything. But I do think pass protection is going to be a little bit more of an issue for Sam, which has always brought out the worst in him. I mean, I think going forward it's not gonna, to me, Andy, it's not gonna be steep decline here or something like that. I just think the journey is going to be a little bit bumpy. Just like it was probably going to be bumpy all along. Just the results were kind of painting over the fact that Sam is still Sam.
Yeah, we're so far away now from the early season. Hey, is Sam Darnold in the MVP conversation?
Oh,
is Sam
God,
Darnold,
yeah.
You know,
like, hey, we should just never say the words, like, we know it's not a word. We should just never say MVP before, like, right now. Like, this should be the moment, unless we're talking about, like, okay, you want to say Lamar Jackson might be pacing towards his third MVP. Sure, that's fine, because he's freaking Lamar Jackson. Like, he's won one of these bad boys. He's won two of these bad boys before. Like, we can talk about that. But if we're talking about, like, is insert player in the MVP race in week three? Well, I mean, the race, they ain't even shot the damn gun off yet. The race has not started.
Yeah, September MVP conversation should probably never happen. Or if they should, they should be as outrageous as a Sam Darnold MVP conversation, I suppose. Yeah. It's kind of funny that it actually existed in the world and happened. So, I'm just like, I gotta see a game. They've got to do to the Titans what literally every good team has done to the Titans, which is totally handle business. And if they don't, it's a high level of concern. Because again, like, hand injury or whatever the reason, just a glitch, as apparently will happen with Sam Darnold periodically. Like, man, for that to have happened against Jacksonville was just stunning to me. Didn't see it coming. Had Darnold in a lot of places. Had him in DFS lineups for exactly that matchup, and I'm still shocked that it happened. And again, if it's injury related, There's not really an end date in sight to that, so that's
right.
No less a concern. That is a huge concern moving forward. And they've got, like, I don't know, I'm looking at their schedule right now. It ain't easy. Late in the year, they've got, you know, the Bears defense coming up, and I don't even know what that is at this point. Like, they're good, but they're not great. But they've got the Cardinals on the schedule. They got the Seahawks on the schedule. They got the Packers on the schedule. The Lions is who they end with. Like, I don't know. This could spiral in a hurry. They have some tough matchups out there.
Yeah, every team in the NFC North has a tough end of season schedule, because they've all got to play each other, and all those teams are really good. So, obviously this matters a lot for players like Justin Jefferson, for TJ Hawkinson. Addison's in, like, the, you know, if you just look points per game wise, he's in, like, the DeMarcus Robinson, Alec Pierce, Rashad Bateman zone of, like, volatility. I don't think he's, like, a guy we're starting every single week, at least at this point. So for those guys, though, and especially how that passing tree dynamic, like, I think that's an interesting thing to watch in this game, because last week Hawkinson and Jefferson tied with a 24.3% team target share, and I mean, I always credit the Jaguars. I think they did a good job defending Jefferson. They had a real good plan to try to take him away. And Darnold is not the guy to, like, come off of that number one read. He's going to try to get it in there no matter what. So that's going to lead to some volatility as well. So it will be interesting to track the Titans' defensive game plan and how that can impact sort of the production of this one. All right, let's move to your third burning fantasy question here, Andy Behrens. Hit me on this one.
Yeah, listen, I don't think this one is burning for very many people, but it is for me, because I need it, and it is it is Audric Estime, and whether he actually consolidates power this week and fully takes over the Denver backfield against a pretty beatable run defense. Again, significant fantasy subject, I guess I would say, if not so much in real life. I can just tell you that things would really be looking up for a couple of my teams if Estime has another game with, like, 16 touches, 18 touches, something like that against Atlanta. First of all, Atlanta, a bottom third team against the run. They give up 4.5 yards per carry, almost 130 rushing yards per game. More than half of the offensive snaps that Estime has played this entire season happened last week against Kansas City. So we don't really have, like, there's not, like, a bunch of film out there on him in the NFL necessarily. The Chiefs defense is very good, was very good, like, super disciplined. So it wasn't like it was a particularly noisy fantasy day for Estime. It was 14 carries, 53 yards. A couple of them went for 10 yards, which is something that Javonte Williams just simply has not provided this year. There's been a total absence of big plays from him. He's been pretty inefficient. Estime he's not the sort of running back who, like, even if he takes over this role, like, they're probably still in on running backs next year. I don't mean to, like, oversell him as a you know, all situation talent necessarily. He's like a big beefy back, and not a guy you can arm tackle, right? He's a guy who will drag defenders a few extra yards. Really tough runner. He also doesn't I feel like he doesn't pretend to be something he's not. Like, he's never trying to bounce it outside because he knows he can't beat anybody to the edge necessarily. He came into the league with like a 4.7 40 or something like that. This is not a fast man. This is a guy who needs to get downhill, who needs to get between the tackles and then just sort of plow his way for 4 yards. So I don't want to oversell him, but I do actually think that he has been, you know, to this point on about a third of the touches, he's been much more productive than Javonte Williams. So I think that might stick. I also think that like an estimate Jaleel McLaughlin tandem, I don't know, they complement each other really well. Like, those are two, you know, each has a skill set that the other is lacking, and that could work out just fine for Denver rest of season.
Andy, how familiar are you with Pokemon?
Not at all.
Oh, well, then this is not going to hit at all. But to me, the fellow millennials out there that are listening to the pod, you guys will get this. Just one quick statement on Pokemon. Any Pokemon beyond the original 150, like once we get past Mew and Mewtwo, I know nothing. I zero knowledge, and also don't acknowledge. I do not acknowledge that they exist. It's the original crew, and that's it. Let me just get that on the record first, because that is a very, very strong take that I have, and it's something that I live by. That being said, Audric Estime is basically Golem, the Pokemon. Let me just put this in context to you. You can Google search Golem after this. He is a giant rock, basically, with a little...
I like it.
With a little snout and little tiny arms and legs that kind of stick out like this. If you're on YouTube... I mean, you can see I'm trying to do the Golem thing right now. That's basically Audric Estime, because he's just rolling like a damn boulder. I mean, like a boulder, like which is what Golem basically is, a big ass rock, and he's rolling downfield. That's about it. And he's not really going to help you in the passing game, most likely. Golem not going to, he's not catching a lot of passes with them little arms out like this either. All right. So yeah, I mean, this thing. Yeah. So like that's basically what you're getting with Estime, which, by the way, can be kind of exciting for a defensive first team. Yes. The Broncos defense is great. It's one of the better units in the league. Super interested to see how they defend this Falcons offense this week, because I think that's sort of the crux of what we get to with Estime here, because of the Golem arms and just his general skill set and the fact that he was third in the backfield in routes run last week, he's not going to be out there, I think, for a lot of passing down situations. So the real kind of where the rubber meets the road with this Estime stuff this week specifically, and I think this week will then determine the rest, you know, kind of the rest of the way and how we think about him, is can this Broncos defense keep down a Falcons offense that made its mistakes last week, but mostly lost the game because of special teams? And if they just make their kicks, they probably win that game. But can this Falcons offense get over on this Broncos defense? Because if they can, then I think that becomes a problem for Audric Golem Estime.
Yeah, it's a huge problem, and it's a great point. He's kind of in that Tank Bigsby situation, except his team's defense is really good and will keep a bunch of games close. But if they do fall behind by a couple scores and the game flow tends toward the pass, I don't know that there's a role for him. He probably has to come off the field, and it probably has to be Javonte or Jaleel McLaughlin. That's a really good point. But despite my lack of awareness of Pokemon, do people still play the little game on the phone where you catch them? Because my wife and daughter were into that for a little while, and I drew the line at actually like driving my daughter places so she could go catch them.
Pokemon Go was the name of the game, and I do not know if people still play. I will say that certain people that used to work at Yahoo would play that game in meetings, and at that point I was like, yo, we are like several years past when this was like acceptable to do in modern society, at least again from my opinion. And look, like I said, I'm a millennial. I grew up on freaking Pokemon. I played the Game Boy games. I was all about Pokemon original crew. That's it, because I eventually grew up. Even when Pokemon Go came out, Andy, I was probably like, I don't know, it was like in my mid-20s at that point. I was like, I'm a little too old to be doing this, but I did like to pull it up and like take pictures of the Pokemon like on bars out and be like, look at this, there's a Rattata in the gulp on the bar, like here in LA, like that's funny. That was about my kind of experience with Pokemon Go. But back to Audric Estime, jeez god almighty. He's still only 4% rostered in Yahoo leagues. That needs to come up by a lot. I'm actually kind of surprised that it's only 4%. Maybe my dumbass is not looking at this right, but I do think he's only still 4%. Like, that's got to come up. But then again, he didn't have a massive statistical game. We have him consensus ranked at running back 28. I'm the lowest of the rankers because I'm a little skeptical, but that sounds about right. Running back 28, you know, he's a running back 3. He's not like a must start guy. So depends on your running back room. If you're in a disaster spot like Andy, yeah, I think you can start him, but he's not like, okay, we get him off the waiver wire and he's got to go into your lineups right now.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. And again, it's also, it's hard to rank these guys who are in situations where you feel like, well, number one, we don't know 100% that it won't, that backfield won't swing back towards somebody else. That is entirely in play. It's completely possible. So we have to factor that in the ranks. And we also have to factor in the possibility that, hey, they get down 14 points and he's probably not on the field.
I mean, shoot, even old Marvin Mims got himself a couple of rush attempts. We actually have Sean Payton out here comparing Marvin Mims to Deebo Samuel. So that's a thing that's happening. Wow. Marvin Mims had more carries than both Jaleel McLaughlin and Javonte Williams. So that's where you're right. Things can get weird and unpredictable in this Denver Broncos running back rotation. All right. That's enough. We're talking about Marvin Mims as Deebo Samuel. We're talking Pokemon Go and my stupid habits of putting the little Pokemon on the ball. That was fun. That was fun. But that was all about all I got out of that game. We are way past where we should be in this podcast. We need to take a break, collect ourselves, and come back on the other side to talk about three matchups Andy says deserve your attention right after this. All right, we're back. We tried to collect ourselves in the break. Don't know if it worked, but we're going to talk.
There's a lot of Pokemon talk during the break, actually.
Yeah, a lot of things about Pokemon. All right, but Pokemon might not come up in the next segment here, which is the three matchups that Andy says deserve your attention. Although now, when you're talking about your first game here, Andy, which is Ravens at Steelers, I am definitely going to be thinking about which Pokemon George Pickens is most similar to. But while my brain is occupied on that, why don't you tell the people what they should be looking out for in this game from a fantasy football perspective?
Yeah, once again, so many good matchups this week. It was three is not enough. But this one is about as fun as any. Deontay Johnson versus Mike Tomlin is an incredible subplot in this game. I hope we get to see 30 or so snaps from Deontay. Tomlin kind of twisting the knife a little bit about how little of Deontay there actually is on film in a Ravens uniform. That was fun. Any game involving Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry is a good bet to be one of our three games to watch. So the biggest stars in this game, incredible. The total in this game is 47.5. So this is maybe not the traditional sort of Ravens Steelers game that we think of, right? This is all offense. I am streaming Russell Wilson in a couple of places for bye week reasons and feeling really good about it. I keep hyping George Pickens both for this week in this particular matchup and as a rest of season trade target because he's got a super friendly schedule coming up. It's all these division games and a couple of easy ones outside of that. We've kind of been discussing all year the fact that, you know, Baltimore just cannot stop your passing game this season. The Ravens are last in the league in passing yards per game allowed. They have allowed the most passing scores, 22 passing touchdowns on the year. They've given up the second most fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks, the most fantasy points to opposing wide receivers. Also, despite being pretty solid against the run, the Ravens have given up a ton of receiving yards to running backs, 470 receiving yards so far on the season. So, like, they're still beatable for running backs, despite looking like a really good run defense on paper. So if we're, you know, when you've got multi-purpose backs like Jaylen Warren, like Najee Harris, you can play them against the Ravens and feel pretty good about it. This thing is just fun all the way around, and I'm pretty anxious to see what Russell Wilson in particular can do.
I agree with you, Andy, that this game sets up so well for a highly entertaining offensive environment, and yet there's a part of me that thinks it is Ravens Steelers, and somehow don't these games always end 1914 or something like that, you know, 1917 maybe if we're lucky. So I don't know. I'm with you, though, that it, again, on paper, it does really set up that way. If you look in the Ravens receiver room, according to Fantasy Points data, Zay Flowers leads the team in target share, yards per route run, pretty beefy 3.36 yards per route run against single high coverage, which is primarily what the Steelers play. You also think about the way the Steelers play defense. They line Joey Porter up on the outside against usually the number one perimeter receiver. That's not going to be a guy like Zay Flowers because he moves around all over the formation. And especially if they do try to get Deontay Johnson, you know, more than five snaps or whatever in this game to get his little revenge or whatever. If that happens, I think Flowers is the one that's going to kick into the slot, whereas Bateman and Johnson will be the outside guys. So I think this is a good, I know Zay Flowers has been a little up and down, and there's actually no way to, people talk about it as, oh yeah, sometimes they just blow teams out and they win in the run game and Zay Flowers' production comes down. Well, that's not really the case. Like, that's not, it doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes they're, you know, Rashad Bateman's just taking over, like having a couple shot plays and Flowers, it just comes down. But I think this is a week to probably to be feeling pretty good about Zay Flowers because of the schematic matchup. But otherwise, it looks like a game where you're going to start the main players. And I agree with you. George Pickens is definitely in that book at this point.
One thing I do want to say about Deontay, and I don't know if people have the stomach to do this necessarily, but when we think about buy lows in fantasy, you gotta actually buy really low if you're gonna get a deal, and it can't be, you know, one of these situations where, like, you know, a week ago we're all saying, oh, buy George Pickens. He wasn't really a buy low, and like, if the whole industry is telling you buy somebody, you're probably not gonna get that great a bargain. But Deontay, I will actually forgive the fact that, like, number one, a couple weeks ago he comes over, you know, he's only had a couple of days with the team, so whatever, it's a quiet game, that's fine. But then they chase that with a Thursday game, which doesn't really give a team a great opportunity to, like, you know, change up the game plan and, like, really install anything new. I think you can forgive that as well. This is still a good player, and it's not going to surprise me in the least if we get to December and Deontay is playing a lot and he's collecting five or six catches a game. Like, that is completely within the range of outcomes to me. And, you know, if you can buy him for nothing right now, which I think you might be able to do, cause he's probably going to hit a bunch of waiver wires. I think that's a small gamble worth taking.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't kidding when I said, like, five snaps. He ran three routes on Thursday Night Football, and he was targeted on two of them. So, I mean, and it, obviously one was a catch for 6 yards where he may or may not have done what Lamar wanted him to. And then, of course, the other one, he fell down on a scramble drill. It's just classic Deontay. But, yeah, I mean, he's only rostered now in 78% of Yahoo leagues. And I'm in, like, some competitive leagues where I've seen him get dropped. So, I mean, I definitely think that if you have the stomach for it, that you could take Andy's advice. I will say I don't know if my stomach's there for it. I've always been a Deontay Johnson fan, but I really think he might have banged himself with this getting traded situation. Yeah. So we'll see what happens rest of the way, because I don't know that Flowers or Bateman are coming off the field. And I mean, shoot, even like Tylan Wallace had popped up for a game against the Bengals. So we shall see with the Deontay Johnson stuff. But let's move to another big AFC game here. Obviously, two teams that know each other very well, Chiefs at Bills.
Yeah, man, this rivalry has given us several of the best NFL games of the last 5 years, right? Like, all-time games in some cases. So really looking forward to it. It is probably the best non-divisional rivalry in the league. I don't know, shoot, in sports. It's great. The pattern, as I think most people know, has basically been that Buffalo beats Kansas City in the regular season. They vault over them in everyone's meaningless in-season power rankings, and then the Chiefs knock the Bills out of the playoffs in January, usually in some super close, epic, incredible game that sometimes changes league rules. But just phenomenal rivalry here. Two very good defenses. Buffalo has been vulnerable to the run, but I don't know that Kansas City, without Pacheco, necessarily has the talent to fully exploit that. It's two of the most aggressive and inventive quarterbacks in recent history. Incredible playmakers. Amari Cooper is maybe the biggest, he's probably the biggest open question in this game. He keeps putting in like you can, there is an obvious need for Amari Cooper in Buffalo. He keeps putting in limited practices, but he's got like this oven mitt like thing on his left hand. I'm not really sure he can squeeze the ball. This isn't like a toughness issue or anything like that. This is literally like how well is his wrist and hand functioning kind of issue, which is pretty important for a receiver, right? Dalton Kincaid, Keon Coleman also banged up here. So they're like, Buffalo is just going to need games from Dawson Knox, from Khalil Shakir, who's been outrageously good. Khalil Shakir still catching almost 90% of his targets, which is just stupid for a wide receiver. The other thing I want to say here is that if Kansas City wins this game, then they're 10-0, and they are going to be favored in every game for the rest of the season, because like they've come through a lot of the most difficult weeks on their schedule. They have like Carolina and the Raiders in the next couple games, and you can really only point to, you know, there's a Chargers matchup in Kansas City that's kind of rough, but it's pretty smooth sailing for the Chiefs after this.
I mean, you are not wrong, and it's crazy that they could. I mean, that this could happen. This could absolutely be.
They keep playing one score games too, is the thing. It's not like they're not just lighting people up, but here we are.
Knowing how to win matters. Yeah. In the National Football League. Hey, a couple things on both receiver rooms here, because you mentioned obviously Bills, you know, dealing with injuries to a lot of these guys. And I mean, Dalton Kincaid also. Yeah, that's a big one too. The Chiefs, if you want to beat the Chiefs, you try to beat them through the slot. You mentioned Khalil Shakir. I think this is a big Shakir game. I think he's probably a guy that I could have considered for like, you know, a conviction pick, keys to winning type player. I think he's someone you should probably try to get in your lineups, because last week we saw him run a route on 82.9% of the dropbacks. He was obviously the team leader in targets. I think that's going to be the case again. He didn't, you know, 6 for 58 last week, especially in a game where there could be a little more back and forth. I would imagine that is going to be an even bigger line for Khalil Shakir. I really like him this week. Also, DeAndre Hopkins, worth noting too, that Hopkins, I think last week predictably didn't have a big game. This one sets up much more like the Tampa Bay game. Obviously, the Bills defense is a million miles better than the damn Bucks defense, but they both play a lot of zone coverage. Those are the type of teams I think Hopkins is going to thrive against. Whereas like a man coverage team, that's not going to be the best for him, because he didn't separate really well against man coverage at this point anymore. But we saw what they did against Tampa Bay, which was zone coverage, kick him more into the slot. That should probably be more of this game here for DeAndre Hopkins. The Bills play zone coverage at a top 10 rate. And they also allow not quite to Chiefs level, but they're a similar team that, you know, if you want to beat them, you probably want to beat them in the slot. The Chiefs allow the fourth most yards per game to slot receivers. The Bills, the sixth most.
Yeah, to your point about Shakir, I feel like one of the big open questions coming into this season was, you know, can oftentimes what happens on a small workload for a player one year, we try to project that out over like, you know, inflate the workload in a massive way. And is he going to be the same guy? And fantasy analysts commonly talk themselves into, of course, you know, if we just give this running back 270 touches instead of, you know, 80, look what he'd be. But in Shakir's case, you know, we're like, he's going to end up like doubling or perhaps more than doubling his workload from last season. And he is still just as like filthy efficient as he was last year. And some of it is, you know, obviously these are short range targets for him. So, you know, maybe when we talk about how he's caught 90% of his targets, it's okay, but they're like 4 yards downfield. But the other thing about Shakir is that he's getting 8.5 yards after the catch per reception this year. He either leads all receivers or he's like right on top of the leaders in terms of missed tackles forced on his receptions. Like he's so elusive after the catch. It's not just about, hey, yeah, he caught the ball 5 yards downfield, no big deal. It's the 9 yards he gets after that that are often so impressive.
Yeah, a couple things here. Number one, you are correct. I believe he is the leader right now in terms of missed tackles at the wide receiver position. Him and Zay Flowers are actually tied right ahead of Ja'Marr Chase. So they've got 15. This is just according to Fantasy Points data, and they're pretty good company. Yeah, pretty damn good company for Shakir. But you did overshoot it in terms of saying he catches passes 4 to 5 yards downfield. His air yards per target is 3.39 through this season, which actually came up last week because it was at like 2.7. I think Shakir can do a little more than that, but that's just crazy that we're talking about a guy who is averaging 11 yards per catch at 3.39 air yards per target. So yeah, dude, Shakir is a baller. He's just a really, really good football player. I don't know if I would love to see them expand his role and ask him to do more. I think I tweeted this yesterday, but anytime I talk about and analyze Keon Coleman, it's like the Green Goblin mask. I don't know. Now I'm doing more nerd pop culture stuff, Andy, so maybe I've lost you, but it's like the Green Goblin mask in the recent Spider-Man movie saying like, big slot, big slot, big slot, big slot, even though that's not how they use him at all. I'd actually love to see Coleman kick inside more and Shakir do a little bit more downfield things to maximize both players, but can't argue with the efficiency in the current role for Shakir.
Just for the record, I understand all Green Goblin and Spider-Man references.
Excellent. That's great to know. Okay, let's wrap it up with your final game here, Andy. Cincinnati Bengals at LA Chargers. This one's a big one, and obviously two quarterbacks that went pretty close to each other in their NFL draft.
Yeah, I love this one. And there's a lot of competition for the third game in the three games to watch, but I love this matchup. First of all, we really need Cincinnati to win just enough to remain engaged and gunning for that final playoff seed, because that offense has been an absolute gift. Matt, the Bengals are 2-3 this season when they score 30 or more points, which is just kind of wild to me. They have gone 0-2 against the Ravens this year in games in which Ja'Marr Chase has a total of 21 catches for 457 yards and 5 touchdowns in 2 games. It's just a wild team. We know what to do with Chase Brown. We know what to do with like basically all of the starting fantasy assets here. T. Higgins, kind of an open question, I guess, in this one. He at least returned to a limited practice, so that's a positive development for him. Obviously, a T. Higgins return would probably mean the end of our interest in Mike Gesicki, but other than that, everything else with this team is pretty neat and tidy. On the other side, Justin Herbert is... This is such an interesting season for Justin Herbert because it's probably his quietest season fantasy wise from a volume perspective, and it's also his best season in terms of pretty much every efficiency metric. He's only thrown one interception. That was way back in week 2. It was like 2 months ago. It was forever ago. There's no volume here, so he's not having a lot of noisy fantasy weeks. But I think he's playing really well. The Chargers defense is at or near the top of the league in pretty much everything that matters. Sacks, takeaways, total yards, rushing yards, passing. And it's the number one scoring defense in the league. They give up just 13.1 points per game. So, this is great offense that keeps putting up numbers against the league's top scoring defense. There's a little bit of like quality of opponent noise, I think, in the defensive numbers for the Chargers. But they also, they held the Chiefs to 17 points. They held the Cardinals to 15 points. Like, when they get a good offense, they actually hold them down.
Okay, I got 2 follow-up points here on this game. One, Ja'Marr Chase, we've had, I think, 2 cycles of what's going on with Ja'Marr Chase this season. And because he's played the Ravens twice, he actually is the current NFL Triple Crown holder. He leads the NFL in catches, yards, and touchdowns, despite the fact that, again, we've had at the beginning of the season, and then when T. Higgins was back, like, what's going on with Ja'Marr Chase? Like, what's up with Chase's usage? And thanks to the Ravens, he's the current, if the season ended today, he'd have the NFL Triple Crown winner. And secondly, you mentioned Justin Herbert in the season that he is having. I'm an idiot. I'm stupid. I'm dumb as hell. I get a lot of wrong when we I'm on this podcast 5 days a week. I'm on two other shows as well. I say a lot of stuff, get a lot of shit wrong. The one thing I felt really good about all year long or all offseason long was that people were going to overthink this Chargers offense and what it was going to be for Justin Herbert. And you could not be any more right about this. Despite the fact that, yes, Greg Roman and Jim Harbaugh want to run the ball. Justin Herbert, exactly kind of how I thought it was going to go. Yeah, the volume is down, but he has the highest yards per completion, air yards per completion, and passer rating of his entire career. And it's actually not, it's by a pretty decent amount. So yeah, like I will take, I don't care about raw meaningless volume. I will take like Joe Lombardi's and Kellen Moore's offense and fire the volume from that into the sun. If we actually get, we get Justin Herbert playing adult football and like throwing the ball downfield. Love to see it for Justin Herbert. Love to see it for Ladd McConkey, who I think should be in starting lineups this week. If I could just say one thing, we got to stop getting Justin Herbert sacked, because he is also, he's got the highest sack rate of his career. And that actually really isn't close. 8.02 sack rate so far this year. And that's a great example, Andy, for why blanket rules in football are a bad idea, because I generally agree. And your boy Caleb Williams is a great kind of test case for this. And just like your boy Justin Fields was a great test case for this before, like sometimes sacks are, can be a quarterback stat, and maybe it's more of a quarterback stat. Not always. It is not always a quarterback stat. It is definitely not a quarterback stat for Justin Herbert. So that's my one thing about the Chargers offense. But I really love this game for fantasy. The only thing I think that could maybe potentially thwart it is that this Chargers defense is really, really good. But I think the Bengals just have so many different ways to hurt you. I can't imagine them getting blotted out in this one.
Yeah, it's not, you know, this is one of those games where you know who to start. You know, it's not that difficult. You're starting Dobbins. Notable, I should also say that Gus Edwards came back and Kamani Vidal wasn't even active. Edwards handled 10 carries, 55 yards, looked like sort of vintage Gus Edwards. So he's a pretty important, you know, understudy running back for us to have on rosters. I don't think he was as interesting as Estime was in terms of ads ahead of week 11, but he's definitely somebody who could obviously fall into a huge workload. I guess the one guy on either side of this game that I'm not even sure what to do with is Quentin Johnston, because he just keeps scoring. Sometimes there's nobody else in the camera frame when he's scoring. Like that's happened a fair number of times, but that's, you know, it's not all accidental. That's a lot of that is just good play design too. So he's been fun, but on low volume. And I suppose you just have to think of him as one of those, like, you know, Will Fuller types where, the big weeks are really going to help you, but there's not going to be volume there.
Yeah, I think based on how much Johnston has come up as like a fantasy recommendation and stuff, people probably wouldn't realize some of the stats that I talked about with Nate yesterday, where Will Disley is actually the second leading target getter and is actually more, even sometimes more than Ladd McConkey, like the first read target player, which we probably don't need necessarily. But I will say for Johnston's sake, if you do have to start him in fantasy and you're trying to chase that ceiling, it has been a lot of defensive mistakes, which aren't accidental. They don't just walk into a game opposing defense and think like, we saw Quentin Johnston's reception perception chart from last year, we don't have to cover that guy. That's not how it goes. But like coverage busts and things like that happen when you're facing a good offense that puts you in binds elsewhere. The Chargers are a good offense that puts you in binds elsewhere, especially now that they've got Herbert involved in the run game. And if there's ever any defense out there, I think that could make a mistake, I think it might be this Cincinnati Bengals defense. So if you got to start Quentin Johnston, that's the story that you can tell yourself. Well, Andy, we told a lot of stories on this pod.
We did.
I think we had some useful stuff, some coping, some emotions, some feelings, and some Pokemon, which, you know what?
That's a full day.
all we were missing was, you know, like maybe a beverage. And I think you and I, this would have gone down as one hell of a time for us.
Hell yeah. Oh man, we should do that. We should do that like in, once we get to December, we should have a beverage on hand for all these.
Yeah, I'll be out of my cutting phase, so I can drink during the middle of the day. that's definitely what my boss wanted to hear. That's what our bosses wanted to hear me say on this podcast. All right. Enough of this. We're going to say goodbye to Andy, because I think if he sticks around any longer, I'm not going to get anything else. I'm not going to get anything else done on this podcast. And we're going to start talking Pokemon or Marvel masks again. So with that, we'll bid farewell to Andy Behrens. We'll take our final break. And on the other side, Tara Roberts, an actual serious football analyst, will join the show to share her make or break players for week 11 and maybe try to keep me on track right after this. Joining us, as she does every week here on the weekly preview show, it is Tara Roberts. Tara, two things. Number one, in the previous segment, I closed it out by saying that you are a very serious football person. So you have a lot to live up to here because Andy and I basically goofed off for the entire first part of the podcast. And on that note, the second thing I need to ask you is, do you have any stance on Pokemon?
I do. I'm a kid of the 90s, so everything Pokemon cards, Pokemon on Game Boy, Red, Blue, all that good stuff. Yeah, I was I was big into Pokemon.
Same. I tried to compare Audric Estime to Andy. I said that he was basically Golem. You know, I'll do it again. He's basically just a big rolling ball with the little tiny arms. He's basically Golem. And that didn't land for Andy at all because apparently he is far too old and mature to be into Pokemon, which I guess, you know, again, Andy Behrens has been doing fantasy football content since, I believe, 1965. So I should have known going into it, you know, how that was going to go. So, I mean, I think he's worked at Yahoo as long as the internet has been in existence. So, again, I should have known that was going to go. But I'm glad at least the reference landed with you.
Yeah, and it's never too late for Andy to learn. It's making a comeback now. My kids are super into Pokemon cards and stuff. So, yeah, they're doing Pokemon battles every single day. So Andy can jump on and have Pokemon battles with the kids.
Yeah, Andy, get off the private jet, go outside in your palatial estate and start, you know, Poke battling. I don't know what. I mean, listen, Andy's got time. After the season is over and he wants to get away from football for a minute because the Bears have sent him into a total spiral of sadness, maybe he can pick up Pokemon. So there we go. That's our advice to Andy Behrens. And as I always say, he never listens to the pod when he's not on, so he's never going to hear any of this. So we're going to have to tell him this the next time we see him. But that is enough goofing around. Like I said, Tara is a very serious football person who is going to help us actually make some real deal fantasy decisions here. As she always does, she's going to join here to talk through her make or break players here for week 11. We've got four interesting candidates to discuss here, and then we are going to finish it up with our keys to winning players. So, Tara, let's dive into the make or break players this week, starting with Patriots quarterback Drake May.
Yeah, I'm going back to quarterback this week. We talked about Bo Nix last week, and I feel like our conversation on Bo Nix was very productive, and it played out exactly the way that we said in a more competitive game and a more neutral matchup. It worked out for him. So I wanted to kind of look at Drake May, not through the same exact lens, but kind of on that situation of saying, okay, even in a less than ideal matchup, these young quarterbacks have the means to succeed. So when we're looking at Drake May, him officially taking over as the starter jumped right off the page for us, right? It was messy, you know, interceptions, mistakes and whatnot, but he has that rushing upside. He has the big arm. And even though he doesn't have the most flashy receiving core, he was making it work. Finishes QB8 against Houston, QB7 against Jacksonville. Obviously, there's more friendly matchups. Then he hit the more difficult matchups of the Jets, Titans and Bears, more difficult pass defenses. And those ended up not going so well for him, but not terrible. I feel like we're, you know, kind of looking at that and kind of missing the mark and saying, okay, they weren't massive upside games, but he wasn't back there finishing as QB 25 or later. He was kind of a mid-tier QB2, decent upside because of that rushing upside that he has there. All things considered, he's been very solid. Passing inconsistent, but again, reliable floor there because of the rushing upside. And this week's matchup against the LA Rams is very, very interesting to me because I love the Rams defense. I saw the vision with them prior to, I play in one IDP league, Matt, an IDP dynasty league. I don't recommend it. No. Okay. Like do I recommend it? I don't know. Cause I took the wrong approach from the defensive perspective to begin with. I'm like, oh man, my offensive players are fire. I'm like, I got CD and Debo. And then defensively, we've had to crawl our way, but it's working out. And one of the players that I invested in was Jared Verse because he saw the vision of what the Rams defense was doing. They said, okay, we're losing Aaron Donald. This is a massive issue, but we're going to try and piecemeal together and create an Aaron Donald. And Jared Verse plays a big part in that. And you've seen his development throughout the course of the season. And I feel like this Rams pass rush is really just coming through and pulling together very well in the latter half of the season. for Drake May, that might not particularly bode so well versus their offensive line. So while, you know, he has the ability to take advantage of the Rams' secondary, you kind of worry, is this a matchup where the pass defense is going to be a problem for him because of their ability to rush the quarterback and maybe get past that offensive line? At the same time, he's got that mobility. He can get outside the pocket. He can make things happen. So on the ground, maybe get outside the pocket, throwing things downfield. I don't feel like this is a negative situation for him. There's upside in this matchup for him to be able to take advantage of it. Now, granted, there's still going to be a lot of sacks. There could be some interceptions here. But from a fantasy perspective, I feel like this is a matchup where he can actually still thrive very well and put up the numbers despite potential for turnovers here.
I love that you called out the Rams defense here because I really like watching this unit. Obviously, it's the guys up front. You know, you mentioned Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, the rookie. But even still, you know, guys like Byron Young pop up here. Yeah. Kobe Turner kind of dominated that game against Miami. Christian Roseboom, I mean, the linebacker, that dude was all over the place. Love me a long-haired linebacker, you know, going side to side. That's always sick to see. So, this unit, I think, look, the secondary is still a work in progress, but up front, the front seven, I think, is coming along here. And I will say, though, to Drake May's credit, and maybe not even to Drake May's credit, maybe the Patriots sort of ecosystem here, all the talk going into, you know, Drake May actually starting was, you can't put him behind this offensive line. He's just going to get smoked. It's going to ruin his career. People talking about, like, this was the worst offensive line ever assembled. Pro Football Focus has among guys that have been taking 50% of their team's dropbacks since week six when Drake May took over, he's like 12th in terms of pressure rate. Mm-hmm. So it's not been like a god-awful situation. And he definitely has struggled under pressure. Every quarterback struggles a little bit under pressure. But when he's kept clean, 91.9 passer rating, that's where he's been able to make his hay. So I feel like if this offensive line could just do a little bit of their job here, it's never going to be perfect, but can they do their job on, you know, 60% of the snaps? That's kind of what they've been doing so far. And if that's the case, you know, I think May can find some spots to pick in the secondary. What are your thoughts like on these pass catchers here? Because I know it's not, there's no clarity. I'm asking this because I was just writing this section up of my preview, like the Patriots section. And it's such a weird group, right? Cause you've got so many different guys playing so many different roles that I think makes it a little bit more difficult to project May on a weekly basis, but just curious your thoughts there.
Yeah, it's rough. And it's not that they're rough, because we've had players that have, you know, surprisingly stepped up. Did I expect Kayshon Booty to step up and be decent? Not at all. That was a pleasant surprise. It's not usable from a fantasy perspective, but for Drake May, it means that he's got, you know, a variety of weapons-ish to be able to utilize here. I actually got a question about on one of the Yahoo social lives about DeMario Douglas, a couple of questions. So I feel like maybe people are kind of tuning back and saying, okay, we're seeing a little bit of uptick because DeMario, when he, what was it? He got sick, maybe was the issue. And
in
then
London,
since, and was a surprise scratch and then, or not so much a scratch.
Would have been nice been kind if he was scratched because then we would have not played it.
these illnesses that pop up. Since then, I feel like it's kind of been up and down in terms of where we've been able to find consistency from him and the volume hasn't been there. But over the past couple of weeks, there's been a slight uptick to where we feel like maybe there's some usability there. So I feel like they're coming into their own. It's not flashy. It's not the best by any means. It's still down there at the bottom, but it's workable. He's making it work. They're not out there, you know, dropping a ton of passes, running wrong routes. It's just them kind of pulling together, growing in their youth and getting on the same page with Drake May. And it seems like it's coming together decent enough to where it's good enough to support May from a fantasy perspective. Are we feeling comfortable with the receivers or pass catchers in, you know, on a regular basis? No, not really. In deeper leagues, we can maybe turn to a couple, but maybe as the season progresses, we'll start to see them arise to the point where we get a little bit more definition from them. That's what I'm kind of looking from them. There's no one that's really stepping out. They're all contributing, but no one's really stepping out and kind of dominating from a target share. So we want to see someone pop up with that. And hopefully Douglas is the one that can push forward on that.
Yeah, as you mentioned, since week eight, nobody has a target share higher than 20%. Kayshon Booty actually is tied with Hunter Henry, 19.8. So those guys are just south of 20%. And Alex Van Pelt, the offensive coordinator, mentioned today that they are and I'm paraphrasing here, but they're narrowing in who they want to keep playing. I don't think they want to keep rotating, and he said that the playing time going forward will reflect that. So that's interesting. I know that there's been some whispers that they kind of want to stop playing Kendrick Bourne, which is interesting because they just gave him a big contract, but at the same time, he's an older guy coming off of an injury, so maybe that they're going to want to try to move on from him. They've played a lot of two tight end sets. Hunter Henry, it's like, oh, great, I want to play Hunter Henry. He's getting all those targets, but then Austin Hooper is running around on 40.5% of the dropbacks, which is higher than all but three of the wide receivers in that span, and like just right kind of close there with Ramondre Stevenson. So yeah, I'm with you that I want to see roles sort of crystallize here, because that will help take Drake May from, you know, maybe a little bit more boom busty and we're just relying on the rushing to maybe being more of a predictable quarterback. But for now, I do think I like your analysis on him, that it's really just about the protection here in this game. And you know, I don't know, this game's going to be really interesting just from how close it will be. Just before we move on, I wanted to share this about the Rams, because I mentioned the pressure stats with Drake May. This season, among quarterbacks who've taken 50% of their dropbacks, Matthew Stafford's 47.1 passer rating under pressure is dead last among 27 quarterbacks to take half their team's dropbacks. And you know, you think like, oh, well, the Patriots don't have a great pass rush. Their pressure rate is bottom 10 in the league. Well, they're two spots higher than the Dolphins, who just gave Matthew Stafford and this the guys they wanted to play on offensive line, some of the actual starters coming back, they gave that group a ton of trouble. So I don't know, this game could be a little closer than people think, and that's just something to keep in mind with these Rams players. I mentioned this on the Monday Night Recap. I was like, I feel like Stafford's actually not playing that well this season, and I think a lot of it is under pressure. So we shall continue to monitor that situation. But all right, this next one, Tara, make or break. Nick Chubb, I mentioned you in the pre-show chat. Obviously we're here to help other people in their fantasy teams, of course. But on this one specifically, you're going to be helping me. You'll be helping me personally, because I have a couple of Nick Chubb teams, one of which is actually competing, this year. And I, what do I do with Nick Chubb? So I turn the floor over to you, make or break Nick Chubb.
This is perfect. I have zero shares of Nick Chubb this year, so it's highly focused on you right now, Matt. We've been looking for this Nick Chubb week for him to finally look like the Nick Chubb that we know and love. Because he's one of those players that has been, you know, obviously when healthy, one of the more dependable and reliable in terms of exactly what we know we can expect from him. We know we can expect a strong workload, high yardage, good yards per carry, touchdowns. And unfortunately, we're getting the workload-ish kind of there. The carries can be a little bit higher, but they're decent enough. He's not having significant contributions from other backs, especially on a consistent basis there. But productivity has just not been there. He is yet to exceed 52 rushing yards on the ground, just one touchdown. Average yards per carry is 2.7. And, you know, as always, zero receiving upside. That's normal. But we're not even getting just a little bit, you know, here and there that we've come to expect from him in the past here. He's failed to reach double-digit fantasy points in half PPR. But at the same time, if we exclude that first game where he came back, because that's fair. You're coming off of a significant injury. Let's take that first game and put it to the side here. The last two matchups were against Baltimore and the LA Chargers. And if there is, you know, one thing, the both of them very strong defenses, but if there's one thing that either one of them can do, it is stop the run. Baltimore has been consistently strong throughout the entire season. In fact, the best yards on the ground was actually Nick Chubb's performance against Baltimore, if that says anything about how incredible they've been against the run. LA Chargers very, very strong against the run as well. So while Nick Chubb has been underperforming, there's an excuse for it. And there's no threat to his volume there. Well, I love Jerome Ford. There's not a situation where we're going to see him creeping in there. I do think this is solidly his backfield. We just need the right matchup here. And if there is a week for Nick Chubb to be Nick Chubb, it is this week right here against the Saints. I'm not going to lie, Matt. I'm leaning in towards, like, I'm not guaranteeing anything, but if there is a week this season, it's got to be this one, right? Because the Saints defense, and yes, they've had the, you know, overall coaching changes that, you know, do bring and boost up morale a tiny bit here. But at the end of the day, this is the Saints defense. They are who they are. And against the run, they have been obliterated, allowed the third most fantasy points to the position. And a lot of times you kind of have to look at that and say, okay, who's it been? It's been guys like Sean Tucker in his 1 week wonder. It has been Javonte Williams in that 2 touchdown game. Like, this is, they've been lit up by anyone and everyone. They do not discriminate. And I think that Nick Chubb has an excellent chance of having that breakout performance that we've been looking for this week in this matchup.
Yeah, even in the upset, thanks to Coach Riz last week, you know, the Falcons still ran all over this Saints team. So I don't think that that's necessarily going to change that part of it. Yeah, I mean, you brought the Javonte Williams. Shoot, my dumb ass was chasing that Javonte Williams game for like 2 weeks in keys to winning or something after this. So, yeah, I'm familiar with the Saints and their bad run defense. So let's just say, hypothetically, somebody's listening to this podcast and you're like, yeah, you know, Tara Roberts thinks Nick Chubb, make or break, like probably going to be a make player. That's great. really looking forward to it because this hypothetical person has been scamming their way at the running back two spot in PPR with Rashad White, who is on bye. Doesn't feel good, but we're not here to feel good. We're here to score fantasy points. So this hypothetical person is looking at running back two between Tony Pollard, been banged up lately, but kind of splitting carries there last week, and maybe it's because of the injury, or Nick Chubb coming off of a bye. We're trying to make or break for this specific person, hypothetical person, Tara Roberts. What do you think?
Oh, Matt, I have them back to back. I swear to God, I do. and I'm probably a tiny bit higher on Tony Pollard, and I need to maybe come down a little bit. No, I guess I might be right dead on consensus there with him. But the concerns for Tony Pollard, they're valid. They really are. When we're looking at Tajay Spears in that backfield, he hadn't existed, and that meant that we were getting an aggressive amount of volume. You then combine that with the fact that Tennessee vocally said, we want to lessen the workload. And for me, I took that a lot as, you know, hey, he's not going to practice and you don't need to panic. He's going to play. He's going to be doing that Josh Jacobs thing on the year that Josh Jacobs was banged up and had the unrealistically high workload, never practiced and then showed up on Sunday and had fantastic games. I kind of thought that was the path that we would be on with Tony Pollard here. But Tajay coming back and making some contributions there just reminded me that this is a back that is, again, very similar to Tony Pollard. They can both do the exact same thing. They're fine on early downs. They're excellent in terms of receiving options. They can both be strong at the goal line. They're very similar backs here. So if they are looking to try and alleviate workload off of Tony Pollard because they're looking at the bottom of the AFC and they're saying realistically, technically speaking, I mean, we can still push forward. We could go on a run. The leagues are very top heavy right now and everyone is still technically in it. So if they're trying to save him up, that volume keeps decreasing. We got a matchup against Minnesota. Yeah, Matt, I might lean towards Nick Chubb, who has the excellent matchup and the guaranteed workload there.
All right. Well, I have a strong feeling, you know, trying to reach out through the universe and get the vibes of it all. I have a strong feeling that this hypothetical person wanted you to say Nick Chubb anyway. So I think that's what we'll go with there. All right. I love it. Let's move on to another running back here who's another, you know, guy coming back from a serious injury but has looked pretty good this year, J.K. Dobbins. We got Gus Edwards back in the backfield last week, but what are our vibes now with J.K. Dobbins in what I imagine you're going to tell us is a very good matchup?
Yeah, and that's what makes it tough here. And I feel like it's actually pretty straightforward with J.K. Dobbins. Gus Edwards came back. We know, and he looked good. He looked very well rested. 10 carries, 55 yards, no contributions in the pass game because that's exactly what we expect. J.K. Dobbins still had the higher carries, higher snap count. It wasn't significant, but he was still the lead back here. And you kind of feel like this is the way that they intended the backfield to be from the beginning. And the aggressive workload that we had on Dobbins just ideally wasn't what they wanted to have. So they made it work without Edwards. Now, moving forward, we've got a situation where Edwards is probably going to contribute, you know, 8 to 12 touches a game, probably. And Dobbins is still going to have the higher upside via his receiving work as well. The only positive thing that I have to say here is, again, you know, matchup extremely favorable against Cincinnati. So we definitely don't want to be benching many people in this matchup here, especially given what we saw with Cincinnati in that last matchup. The good thing here is that when we're looking at how Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins are split in terms of goal line work earlier in the season, when Gus Edwards was active, Dobbins did have multiple touchdowns on the ground. So it doesn't feel like this is a situation where he's going to be pigeonholed into saying, okay, every time you get near the goal line, you know, we're doing a Jamal Williams Detroit where he's immediately coming in. I'm sorry, J.K. Dobbins, you're out and you're just not going to get that opportunity. I feel like the touchdown opportunities are still going to be there. So he's got that upside. It's just not as high as it was before, where we were having realistic possibilities of him easily having top 10 finishes and excellent matchups. Still an RB2. RB1 top upside, that's unfortunately capped, but still a guy that I do feel comfortable with starting as an RB2 or at the very least flexing. It's not completely destitute with Gus Edwards coming back here.
I like that way of looking at it. It's just like an adjusting expectations a little bit. Yeah, it's probably not going to be he's touching the ball 20 times anymore, but honestly, do we really want J.K. Dobbins touching the ball 20 times over the course of the season? I think it's kind of nice to have Gus Edwards back there to take some of those grinder carries. And I think this is when it's good to look at usage on the whole, right? Where we're looking at, okay, the snaps plus the rush attempts and not just seeing like, oh, J.K. Dobbins losing some carries to Gus Edwards. The fact that he still got the touches at the goal line, even if Hassan Haskins vultured one in there in his big revenge moment against the Tennessee Titans. His revenge game. Oh, my God. Still tilted about that. But, yeah, it's nice to see that J.K. Dobbins still was getting those goal line carries. And this is just such a good matchup, like you said. I want to try to – it's one of those games, Bengals, Chargers, where I want to try to get guys in like that are usually flex consideration players. I'm trying to get those guys into my lineup here. So yeah, I like your kind of view on Dobbins. Maybe not a running back one, but certainly a running back two, maybe a flex player, but somebody should probably break ties in favor of getting into your lineup. Your last make or break player here, Tara Roberts. I mean, he's been breaking. He's been breaking a lot. And I've said that all Bears pass catchers are in the coping corner right now. They are, and Caleb Williams, passing game players in the coping corner. Probably don't want to be starting these guys. But do you feel any differently about Bears wide receiver DJ Moore in the midst of an offensive coordinator change?
Yeah, I won't skirt around the issue. No. For every amount of positive that I was about those first guys that we were talking about, it just goes in the complete opposite direction here with DJ Moore. And I feel terrible about that. And, you know, maybe we get the boost of change in coaching, although Eberflus is there. So, you know, how much boost can we really get? When we're looking at Chicago, I just don't know what can change that benefits DJ Moore specifically. Because if they get into a situation where they're looking towards, and now this is another team that is technically still in theory in it, but if they get into a situation where they're looking towards the future and we want to start building out our team as we will moving forward and increase that rapport with Caleb Williams and let's say Rome Odunze, we want to see what we can get out of Rome. We've already seen like Rome just kind of emerging here. And maybe we kind of jumped the gun in terms of looking at some of those, you know, performances that he had had compared to DJ Moore and saying, oh my God, this guy is clearly taking over as the wide receiver one. No, but he's pushed himself as an equal is what the feeling that I get there. And there's a whole lot of equal going on in that receiving core. So even that's my problem, that even if we do get a little bit of an uptick with the firing of Shane Waldron, how much is the ceiling? Where's the uptick going to, unfortunately? Because we look at last week, I mean, the guys all had 6 targets each. Then you got a few to Cole Kmet. Yeah, these guys are deservingly in the coping corner right there because there's just no upside that exists for any of them. And even beyond this week, I mean, this week is a terrible situation because for every, you know, particularly for Caleb Williams as well, because Green Bay's defense is interesting, right? It's not that it would be a complete shutdown opportunity here, because while they do have the ability to shut down a specific receiver if they want to, that's not the approach that they always take. And receivers can succeed on them. But when we're looking at how this would affect Caleb Williams and his ability to be productive, get those targets to the players that we want him to. The Packers defense has been a turnover machine. I just got a bad feeling that this is another situation where Caleb is going to struggle. Offensive line has been a major issue. That can't change. That's not going to change. So even if DJ Moore operates as the wide receiver one and gets, you know, the majority of targets, how productive can we be with him, or can he be with them? How usable are those targets going to be? That's my issue here. And even beyond that, I mean, just we got disillusioned on the Bears because they had a nice little section there of very friendly matchups. And, you know, good for Caleb Williams. You want to thrive in the good matchups. You know, he didn't do anything wrong there. But unfortunately for his schedule, this back half is just straight up ugly. And I don't know who planned this out for the Bears. Maybe they, you know, they're all of their NFC North games are now from it's that's basically the remainder of the season there, just wiping the slate clean with everyone, with Minnesota and Detroit and Green Bay two times each. It doesn't seem fair. And realistically, the Bears probably know that there's things that have to adjust in preparing for the future here.
It's brutal. I mean, it's just so brutal for Chicago. I think if you want to try to find a silver lining for these wide receivers, it would be, I mean, especially for DJ Moore, who just, we've talked about it a lot. The effort's not been there. I think you said disillusioned. I think he has been disillusioned with this franchise for a minute now. Even if he got paid in the offseason, I just don't think he, I don't think he ever bought what this offense was selling. I don't know if Thomas Brown is going to change everything there, but maybe it is like, okay, I'm this guy's out of the building in Shane Waldron. And I, you know, I feel bad bagging on one guy, but it's just like, maybe, you know, he's out. There's a breath of fresh air here. There's more accountability, which I know has, which has got, you know, that's been the phrase coming out of the Bears locker room this week about, like, Keenan Allen's talked about it and stuff like that. That would be one thing. Okay. And also I would say role, you know, if we see something different from these wide receivers, because I think, like, I think Roma Dunze is the guy that should be playing X receiver for this team. That's what he did in college. Like, I don't understand why he's become like the move around player for them. I think DJ Moore should probably be the move around player. And I wonder if DJ Moore thinks that too. I just think that there's a chance. You know, I mentioned earlier, I was on Kevin Clark's podcast talking about that with Andy, and we were talking about like these like wide receivers, if they don't believe what they're being asked to do is going to set them up for success, these guys can definitely not like start, you know, packing it in or not going to the tank or anything, but they can become frustrated and they can wear that frustration and everything. So I think that's been a lot of what's going on with DJ Moore here, but that's stuff that Tara and I are kind of saying, like, you need to watch out for this, right? Like, okay, if we see DJ Moore playing a different role, we see Roma Dunze playing a different role, maybe then we can start to consider them in future weeks. For now, I'm with you that I think that these guys need to, DJ Moore certainly needs to be on benches at this point.
Yeah, it's possible that it can turn around and watch and see. See how they develop. Maybe Caleb makes a leap and things can change here. But this week in particular, I'm just not willing to risk it at all. There are 1,000 different directions you can go that offer some level of upside and a decent floor. It would be one thing if Moore was offering us a decent floor here. But that's not happening. When you can get as low as 4 or 5 fantasy points here, I can go 10,000 different directions and say, okay, am I playing a player with the talent of DJ Moore, with the true upside of DJ Moore? No, but I am playing someone that I know can at least get me to 10 fantasy points, and I'd rather go that direction on there.
All right. Well, that was a bummer. Yeah. let's end this thing on a positive note, as we always do every single week. Let's toss it to our keys to winning, presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And for week 11, as it always is, our keys to winning is picking you some guys that are going to make the difference in your flex spot, because this is the time. All right, you got it. It's always the time to win in fantasy football, but right now, especially, a lot of you are trying to make that final push towards the playoffs. Maybe you got some guys that I mentioned up at the top of the show are not going to be playing because of bye week, so you need a little fill in, especially at the wide receiver position. Tara, give me your key to winning player here in week 11.
I don't usually use words like guarantee because it's football and anything can happen. These are professional players, right? You know, on any given Sunday, anything can happen. But when it comes to defenses, if there is any team that I feel super comfortable with saying, yes, by all means, these wide receivers facing them will absolutely light it up, it's the Seattle Seahawks. And that might be an understatement. So Juwan Jennings is set up perfectly in this matchup here. We finally got to see the entire San Francisco receiving core as they will be moving forward through the remainder of the season here. And Juwan Jennings dominated with targets, 11 targets, catching 7 of them for 93 yards. It was a solid entry back into the system and for his transition into this new role, taking on this workload specifically of Brandon Ayuk here. And we knew how Kyle Shanahan has always thought very highly of Juwan Jennings. He's proven it contract-wise and just trust-wise. And we know that he has the trust. Brock Purdy has the trust in him as well. There's strong rapport. And when I look at some of the players that have been been just lighting up the Seattle defense. You can understand why I almost want to use the word guarantee, but I'm not going to, just because they have been lit up. DeMarcus Robinson and Cooper Kupp, Keon Coleman and Khalil Shakir, Debo Samuel and George Kittle, Darius Slayton and Wandale Robinson. They have been lit up by multiple mouths from the same team. The Seattle defense here, we've got a ton of talent in San Francisco, but Juwan Jennings, along with multiple players, can absolutely capitalize on this matchup and be a strong flex play here.
I love it. You got just right to the line of guarantee and stopped right at the line. Yes. I like that. We've talked about Juwan Jennings all week, and I'm really glad that you've sort of put the exclamation point on it, that yes, all of these things we've talked about, he's always like a role player that I've had a little fascination with, really admired the blocking, the clutch third down catches, all that stuff. Okay, now we're seeing him in the extra receiver role. We're talking about all that stuff. You're putting the exclamation point on it that he's got to be in your lineup this week. I love that recommendation. I'm going to stick at the wide receiver position. I'm going to talk about Browns wide receiver Cedric Tillman coming off of the Cleveland Browns and their bye week. In the two games prior to Cleveland's bye week, Cedric Tillman was one of the most utilize players at his position across the entire league. Tillman garnered 19 targets in those two games, 268 air yards, fifth most among all receivers, and a pair of end zone targets. I mean, you really can't ask for much more at wide receiver than that. I've talked about this a lot on the show. Tillman, I think he's got legit game. Tillman's a big receiver, can win at X. He'll get some separation for you. He wins contested catches, and he's got a little subtle ability to earn yards after catch. Over just over 3 yards after the catch per reception in this two-game span. And these are all skills that he flashed in college, and I think he's turned that to real legitimate tape that's right up there with the production so far. So again, coming off the bye, Tillman and the Browns play a Saints defense. We talked about it earlier in what they're doing in the run game. Well, they're declining in the secondary as well. We know they traded Marshawn Lattimore. The pass rush has been hit or miss. In just the last month, they've allowed the seventh most yards per target as the pass defense has issues both in coverage and especially tackling. So not a stay away matchup for any of these Browns passing game players, but Tillman is chief among them to me this week. So he is my keys to winning player. And with that, Tara Roberts, we've said it all. We've done it all. We've talked Pokemon. We've talked Bears Misery. We've talked Juwan Jennings greatness. Appreciate the hell out of you. Tell the people what you've got coming up on the Yahoo airwaves rest of the week.
Yeah, of course. Make sure you guys check out the Make or Break article with Yahoo. It's got more on these players and additional players as well. So go ahead and be sure to check that out. And then, of course, as always, join us on Fantasy Football Live on Sunday.
Yeah, join us on Fantasy Football Live on Sunday so you can see Tara continue to windmill dunk on all three of us goofballs in our flex contest. I'm more invested in this, which is great, Tara, because I suck at the contest and I'm in fourth place. I'm more emotionally invested in that than almost any fantasy team I have right now. So the fact that you continue to crush. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you're clearly invested. You're destroying all of us. So again, definitely people should, yeah, check in on with us on Fantasy Football Live on Sunday morning and see Tara continue to dominate in the primetime picks and all, of course, you know, the content and all that stuff that we do as well. Make sure you're tuning in 12 p.m. Eastern leading up to kickoff every Sunday morning. For now, that is going to do it for this show. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Next time you hear from us, Week 11 Sunday is going to be in the books, and Andy Behrens and I will be here to break it down. Until then, we are out.